morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada, and on today's programs, we're going to expose the misconceptions associated with religion and with politics, with military and with economic schemes. And instead of merely presenting the news this morning, I'm going to try to explain the motivations behind the perpetrators and what these events ultimately portend for our future. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms by way of His teaching, ultimately replacing religion with reason. Our phone number, for those who are listening and would like to question, criticize, or affirm anything I have to say, is 877-300-7645. Also, if you're interested in just considering the evidence for yourself that provides the basis of the conclusions that are aired as part of this program, I invite you to go to introtogod.org, yadaya.com, prophetofdoom.net, or questioningpaul.com. There you will find many thousands of pages of evidence, mostly testimony from Yahweh, that has been presented for your consideration. During the onslaught of electoral news over the last week, there have been a couple of news items that I thought were worthy of your consideration, since almost nothing in the news related to this election is credible. We find that Syrian rebels have now been accused of committing war crimes after a video showing an execution of government soldiers appeared online. I have watched the video. I would encourage everyone to watch the video. The video is a combination of men standing around a group of soldiers, kicking them, abusing them, and then firing hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of rounds into their bodies while they lay on the ground, all while shouting Allahu Akbar. The shouts of Allahu Akbar and the rat-a-tat-tat of AK-47s is the unmistakable sign of Islam at work. Allahu Akbar was first uttered by Muslims when Muhammad had them raid for the second time a Jewish community at Kabar. That was the first time they raided Kabar, but the second time they had raided this community previously, several years prior, they had kicked them out of their home in Yathrib, today's Medina, and stolen everything that belonged to them, but allowing them to be exiled, driving them out and away from their homes. The next two subsequent Jewish communities in Yathrib would not be so fortunate. Their men would be murdered by Muhammad and his first Muslims. Their women would be raped by them. Their children would be sold into slavery. These, at least at this point, had only been robbed and expelled from their homes. Now in Kabar, which was a farming community, Muhammad and his henchmen, armed to the teeth, descended upon them. And so Muhammad, wanting the Jews, whose name is, or really, Ya'udem, who were living, of course, in Yathrib, you get the picture here, he wanted his Muslims, who were now devotees of Allah, to tell the Jews that they were about to savage, that their God, Allah, was better than the God of the Yehudim, who is Yahweh. And so for the first time, what's called the Islamic prayer of fear was uttered, Allahu Akbar. It coincides with the pillaging of the Yehudim Jewish community in Kabar. For those who haven't read this story, I would encourage you, beg you, to go to prophetofdoom.net and to consider what happened at Kabar. Because when you know that story, as it's reported, in all of its brutal detail in Prophet of Doom, you will then come to understand the nature of Islam and why it cannot be tolerated. The Prophet of Doom presentation of what happened at Kabar is probably the best documented, most comprehensive, most contextual analysis of the Islamic prayer of fear, Allahu Akbar, ever written. So this is what happened. He's screaming Allahu Akbar, showing they're fundamentalist Muslims, killing their own, which is something that Yahweh predicted they would do. He said of Ishmael's descendants, today's Muslims, that they would be wild asses of men. Their hand would be raised against their brother's hand would be raised against them, and they would live in hostility with the whole world. So this footage that shows these war crimes shows soldiers being beaten before being shot to death. These are the very militants, the very rebels that the United States and Europe seeks to arm to provide more weapons and more support. In all, more than 150 people died in the slaughter, said the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, a UK activist group. The SOHR, S-O-H-R, said that among the victims were over 70 government soldiers, 43 civilians, and 38 rebels. Meanwhile, Amnesty said in a statement, this is shocking footage. It depicts a war crime in process and demonstrates an utter disregard for international and humanitarian law by the armed group in question. The armed group in question confessed to the crime. They were screaming, Allahu Akbar. They were not screaming, Free Syria. They were not screaming, Death to Assad. They were screaming, Allahu Akbar. They confessed to the crime. This article says, unaware what Allahu Akbar means, that no group so far has admitted to carrying out the killings, but it is alleged that an extremist Islamic group, the Al-Nusra Front, was responsible for the killings, the BBC's neighboring reporter in Lebanon reports. For months, activists have said that similar executions by regime forces were occurring on a daily basis, so they were justified in reciprocating. And now there has been mounting evidence of similar tactics being used by the rebel groups as well. Although many have signed a code of practice banning such abuses, they are occurring with reckless abandon. U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton earlier warned that radical Islamist fighters were trying to hijack the Syrian revolution. Remember the hijack phrase? Yes, it was used in New York back at the time that fundamentalist Muslims yelling the same Islamic prayer of fear, screaming Allahu Akbar, meaning that Allah is greater than Yahweh, that these same religious fundamentalists flying planes into American buildings, killing 3,000 people, screaming Allahu Akbar, were said to have hijacked their religion. No. And it isn't true now that the Secretary of State is uttering the same phrase. Fundamentalist Muslims have not hijacked anything. They have been hijacked by their religion, but they did not hijack their religion. They did not change their religion. They did not corrupt their religion. They have not interpreted in an extreme way the Islamic religion. They are the most fundamentalist Muslims on the planet, the best Muslims on the planet, and we need to learn that, Madam Secretary, starting with you. These fighters are not hijacking the Syrian revolution. They are the Syrian revolution. There is no revolution in Syria apart from fundamentalist Muslims screaming Allahu Akbar while committing horrible atrocities. Her comments have drawn an angry response from opposition leaders who say that the failure of the outside world to support the uprising with practical help, which means giving them weapons, has left the field open to the radicals. There are no radicals fighting against Assad. You have fundamentalist Muslims that are fighting him, period, end of conversation. Those who may not be fundamentalist Muslims, who want to receive the money and skim money from the arms gifts to these fundamentalist Muslims, would have you believe that they are freedom fighters, but they have nothing. They are not in the least bit involved in this conflict. No, they sit outside of Syria, just wanting to take credit for it, wanting to be the emissaries of the arms and the weaponry. And so they're saying because we have not provided enough weapons and money to them, that the Muslims have risen in authority. This then followed that report. The United States, this was Hillary Rotten Clinton again, calling for a major overhaul of Syria's beleaguered opposition, saying that it was time to move beyond the Syrian National Council and to bring those who are, this is a quote from our Secretary of State, in the front lines fighting and dying today. Miss Secretary of State, Hillary Rotten Clinton, wants to have the United States arm and equip and abet those in the front lines fighting and dying today. Well, who's fighting and dying today on the front lines of the Syrian revolution? Fundamentalist Muslims. And so it is those that she wants to bring in, it's those that she wants to equip, to arm, to aid. We would be aiding the very people that would seek to destroy the United States and seek to destroy Israel. The Secretary of State, signaling a more active stance by Washington in attempts to form a credible political opposition to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, said in a meeting in Qatar that this would be the opportunity to bring more people to the table and to broaden the coalition against Assad. The coalition against him is singular. It's monolithic. It is comprised entirely of fundamentalist Muslims and no one else. It is supplied through the conduit of Saudi Arabia and the Wahhabist there and their desire to fight a proxy war against Iran and by the warlord, the fiefdom dictator over Qatar. And as we read in previous articles, those posted by the New York Times, the fundamentalist, the Islamic group, the more weapons they received. That is the truth. The more we move toward those fighting this revolution, the more we aid and abet our enemies. It is what we did in Egypt. It is what we are doing in Syria. It is what we did in Iraq. It is what we will have done by the time we leave in Afghanistan. It is what the United States does best. We manufacture our next enemy and are doing it all over again. I am your host, Yetta. We're talking about the nature of the United States and its tendency to manufacture its next enemy. We are now doing so in Syria, where the President of the United States is calling for the United States to start arming the Mujahideen in the front lines, fighting and dying today. We saw what they had done as they screamed Allahu Akbar and committed war crimes simultaneous with this declaration. And I'm about to move to another story that tells you all you need to know about the people that the Secretary of the United States would like to endorse, would like to call her allies. As the Secretary of State was meeting on this, she said, "This cannot be an opposition represented by people who have many good attributes, but who in most circumstances have not been inside Syria for 20, 30, 40 years," Clinton said during a visit to Croatia. I'm also going to address Croatia and what she had to say there in a moment, because the United States is almost universally on the wrong side of everything these days. It would be impossible to attribute America's being on the wrong side each and every time an issue arises on just bad luck. So there is a conscious plan, a conspiracy at work here, and it is one that is purely evil. There has to be representation of those who are on the front lines fighting and dying today to obtain their freedom. They're fighting and dying today, Madam Secretary for Islam. Listen to them. play the video, which they were so proud of, where they were screaming Allahu Akbar. That identifies who they are. The group that perpetrated the mass murder took credit for their crime. That is who is fighting. They're fighting for Islam. Islam does not mean submission. It is the antithesis of submission. Islam, it is the antithesis of freedom, I should say. Islam means submission. Wake up, America. This is the regime that you have empowered in this country, and they are purely evil. She would go on to say there needs to be an opposition that can speak to every segment of every geographic part of Syria. Come on. Again, the opposition is uniformly Sunni Muslims. Uniformly. There is no material aspect of the opposition that isn't fundamentalist, Salaf, Sunni Muslim. They are fighting a proxy war against the Shiites of Tehran. And the forces at play here is Saudi Arabia and Qatar are providing the weapons that are American made, American supplied to the Sunnis so they can fight this proxy war against the Iranians. And on one side you have the United States and Europe favoring the Sunnis, and you have Russia and China favoring the Shiites. We are playing with the potential of world war here. And all because no one seems willing to take the time to understand what is really happening, what is going on in Syria. There is no one capable of representing the entire country. The country is divided between Shia and Sunni Islam, with 10% being Roman Catholics. The Shias and the Roman Catholics all favor Assad. The Sunnis are opposed to him. It is that simple. Syria's revolt has cost an estimated of 32,000 dead. There's three times that number missing, and the violence continues unabated. They bombed near a Shiite shrine in a suburb of the Damascus capital, killed six more people later in the week. This then out of Syria this morning. An Islamist suicide bomber killed at least 50 Syrian security men on Monday, an opposition group said, and what would be one of the bloodiest single attacks on President Bashar al-Assad's forces. So, Madam President, if you are interested in having America arm those who are fighting and dying on the front lines, then you need to start making suicide vests, suicide bombs. Can you do that, Madam President? Does the United States want to deploy its industrial complex to start manufacturing suicide vests and improvised explosive devices? Is that what we have turned to? Because if you want to aid the man fighting and dying on the street, then you need to be able to equip suicide bombers, Madam President. A Syrian state media reported that the suicide bomber had targeted a rural development agency in the Hama province, and the Syrian government, of course, put the death toll at two. We're going to consider what the Syrian government response to the slaughter of 50 of its citizens and what they had to say about this incident when we return. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. I am your host, Yada. You can participate in this program by calling 877-300-7645. Remember just a few minutes ago, I shared a story of the war crimes that were committed by Muslims, a video that I would encourage you to watch online. You've got the sound of hundreds, if not thousands, of rounds being shot from AK-47s by Muslims shrieking Allahu Akbar as they kicked their captives and then murdered them, all while praising their God. Well, the group that did that was the Al-Nusra Front. The fact is that this suicide bomber would also represent those now fighting and dying. Well, The suicide bomber was from the al-Nusra Front. At least 50 people were killed by him, said Rami Abdelrahman, the head of the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights. He drove his car into the center of the community and then blew himself up. A series of explosions followed. Yes, indeed, Madam President, Mrs. Rotten Clinton, twice now, on bookends of your commitment to arm those fighting and dying in Syria, we have the al-Nusra Front. Al-Nusra in Arabic means those who provide aid and assistance. This is Allah's view of providing aid and assistance. It is killing. The al-Nusra Front is an Islamic group. This is now a direct quote from the article. The al-Nusra Front is an Islamist group made up of militant Salafists. What is a Salafi Muslim? A Salafist is a Muslim who adheres to the teachings of Muhammad and the first Muslims. He is someone who values the Quran and the Hadith, the oral reports from Muhammad and his companions. A Salaf Muslim is a fundamentalist Muslim, a good Muslim. And being a fundamentalist good Muslim makes a person horrible as an individual. Any good Muslim is a terrorist. Now, not all Muslims are terrorists. Bad ones are not. It's possible to be a bad Muslim and be a peaceful person, according to the Quran. It is impossible to be a good Muslim and not be a terrorist, according to the Quran. These individuals are militant Salafis, and therefore they are the very enemy of all humankind. And they are the very people that the Secretary of State and her President, Barack Hussein Obama, want America to equip. So we can only assume that America is going to go into the manufacture of suicide bombs. Meanwhile, in Qatar, the Syrian National Council has broadened its membership to more than 400, bringing in opposition activists and groups from inside the country, because what do they want? They want to control the flow of weapons into Syria and to skim the dollars of support coming from Europe and the United States. The move was announced yesterday, the second day of a meeting, and is designed to deflect criticism that the exile-led coalition fails to represent the people on the ground. If they represent the people on the ground, then they're horrible. If they don't represent the people on the ground, then they're useless. It is a lose-lose scenario. I told you that I would cover another story that just shows how disgustingly immoral the United States is as it deals internationally. Europe and the United States teamed up on Tuesday to press Bosnia, Serbia, and Kosovo to overcome the legacy of Yugoslavia's bloody collapse as a condition for closer integration with the West. Quote, "If you do not make progress, you will be left behind," U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Rotten Clinton warned at the start of a trip to the region with the EU Foreign Policy Chief Catherine Ashton. So the United States and the EU are acting as one, with foreign policy chiefs arm in arm. NATO member Croatia will follow Slovenia in joining the 27-nation EU next year. We're going to investigate what Croatia represents and why that is telling. But ascension is a very distant prospect for the five countries carved out from federal Yugoslavia in the 1990s. This should also be of interest to you because the Balkans will form the initial stronghold for the anti-Messiah, the Antichrist. In Bosnia, where 100,000 people died in a 1992 through 95 war, Clinton urged rival Serb, Muslim, and Croat leaders to overcome ethnic fighting that stalled reforms sought by the EU and NATO. Now, the Serbs are almost exclusively Protestant, they're Orthodox, but non-Roman Catholic Christians. The Muslims are, of course, Muslims, and the Croats are Roman Catholics. Their infighting is not ethnic, it is religious. The West invested heavily to cement peace and stability in the former Yugoslavia. Using the pull of NATO, nothing says peace like joining a military organization, and the EU membership to reconcile forces and encourage reform. It is unlikely that the Balkans are all going to cozy up in the EU, because there's going to be a separate coalition carved out of the southern and Balkan nations that will emanate out of a combined Greece and Macedonia that will take many of these countries that are being disenfranchised and disassociated from the EU, and they will form their own coalition. It will be the initial power base of the Antichrist. This article says, but that progress has been patchy. The debt crisis in the Eurozone has contributed to a growing sense of resistance among existing EU members toward further enlargement, and hurt the bloc's influence in the Balkans. You see, that economic crisis is keeping the EU from swallowing up the Balkans. No, it will distance itself from them, because that will be the power base initially of the Antichrist. The Euro crisis and EU's diminishing ability to win hearts and minds threaten to both marginalize and fragment the Western Balkans. Brezhnev wrote in a policy brief for the European Council on Foreign Relations. Yes, indeed. The Council on Foreign Relations is an essential aspect of the conspiracy that will be embraced and orchestrated on behalf of the anti-Messiah as well. You're seeing all of these forces at play in this one article. While Croatia will join the EU next year, why? Because the Ustasis of Croatia, the Roman Catholics, fit the mold of what the EU is looking for. They're anti-Semitic, they're anti-everything that is decent, is why they fit perfectly into a new world order. Bosnia's Muslims want the central state straightened, but are opposed by leaders of the autonomous Serb Republic, who frequently threaten to secede because you can't live with Muslims, and they know it. Clinton said these threats were totally unacceptable. Well, it's exactly what's happening in Nigeria, where the Islamic North wants to impose Sharia law on the entire country, and the only solution is to let the Muslims be miserable all by themselves and create their own hell under Sharia law, and to have an independent state, independent of Muslims in the South. But Clinton, who says, nope, that is totally unacceptable. Why? Because she knows that Islam will prevail. It will, through terror, come to impose itself on the rest of the Serbs. The Muslim chairman of the rotating Bosnian presidency said that the EU and U.S. investment in Bosnia's future would be preserved and protected. In other words, he knows that America and the EU are on the side of Muslims. Now, I'm going to take the rest of our brief time this morning in our news segment to share with you something I wrote years ago as a result of doing some research on the Croats. This is that story. The Croatian Ustasi has a long and ugly history, and it is one that torments us today. It begins in the aftermaths of Hitler's attack on the Soviet Union in 1941. Croatia declared war on the USSR and sent an army division to fight alongside the Nazis on the Eastern Front. After the Japanese Pearl Harbor attack on December 7, 1941, Croatia declared war on the United States. And yet, who is it that America is embracing? The Croats. Beginning on June 12, 1941, a deal brokered and promoted by the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, Muhammad Amin al-Husani, a Palestinian Muslim cleric, political leader, and general in Hitler's SS, and the Nazis on behalf of the Ustasi, restricted the movement of all Jews and Serbs in Croatia. It was then that the mass killings began. Since this Muslim is important, albeit in the most horrible sense imaginable, you should know that his title, Grand Mufti, means that Muhammad Husani was considered to be an Islamic scholar. The Mufti title was awarded to Islamic clerics who were authorized to interpret the Quran, the Hadith, the Sunnah, and Sharia, and who, based upon their extensive knowledge of Islam, were licensed to issue binding religious dictates called fatwa. With the Grand Mufti's help, during the 4 years between 1941 and 1945, the independent state of Croatia executed over 800,000 Orthodox Christian Serbs and Jews in its territory. This is the country the United States and Europe are embracing. Their victims is the one that we are lecturing. We're telling them to just get over it. Okay, so 800,000 Christian Serbs and Jews were massacred, were tortured by the Croats, and we're embracing Croatia. Just live with it. You shouldn't hold a grudge just because 800,000 Orthodox Christian Serbs and Jews were murdered by these Croats. Let's just forget history. Let's embrace the villains. Let's distance ourselves from the victims. Most of all, the killings were orchestrated by the Ustasi, who were Roman Catholic fascists in league with Islam. The genocide in Croatia and Bosnia-Herzegovina was accompanied by ritualistic beheadings in public places, replete with sadistic and unbridled celebrations that were ghoulish. Thousands upon thousands of Serbs were hurled from the mountaintops, while others were beaten to death with clubs. We're going to return to this story and complete it after the break. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. We were considering how it is that the United States seems to always be on the side of evil around the world and opposed to the victims of evil. When we invaded Iraq, we gave the country to the mullahs in Tehran. It's just a staggering trail of being on the wrong side. The United States decided that it would fight against Hitler by befriending Stalin, and yet Stalin's legacy was that of a man who would not only kill 30 to 40 million of his own citizens, but also would imprison Europe and create a worse scenario for Europeans than existed under the Nazi regime. And they would come back, of course, to bite us in Vietnam. We aided and abetted Mao Zedong in World War II in the Pacific Theater over Chiang Kai-shek, and he would amass troops to slaughter Americans in Korea. We tend to manufacture our next enemy. We are once again doing it in Syria. We are doing it in Croatia. Bill Clinton actually declared war on the victims of the Croat Ustasi, with Americans bombing them while arming and abetting the Muslims who had led to their slaughter just a few decades previously. The story of the Croats and their murder of the Serbs is such that entire villages were burned to the ground. Women were raped, including little girls, and men and boys were sent on long death marches in the middle of the winter. And while that was horrid, it was not the end of the story. The devoutly religious Ustasi leader, Dr. Ante Pavelić, called the Croatian, who was called the Croatian Führer, he is lauded today as a hero. His picture adorns the T-shirts of a new generation of Croatian Ustasi terrorists that the United States and Europe is embracing. The anti-Serbian state that America and NATO helped establish in the 1990s deploys the Ustasi flag, symbols, slogans, and uniforms. The marriage of Catholicism, Islam, and Nazi-style fascism is on the surface a strange one, but the Encyclopedia of the Holocaust, under the entry of Mohammad Husseini, Hitler's supporter, writes, It so happened that Husseini made his contribution to the Axis war efforts in his capacity as a Muslim rather than as an Arab leader. He did so by recruiting and organizing in record time during the spring of 1943 Bosnian Muslim battalions in Croatia, comprising some 20,000 men. These Islamic volunteer units, called Hanjar or the Sword, were put in Waffen SS uniforms and they fought Yugoslav's partisans in Bosnia. They also carried out police and security duties in Hungary. They participated in the massacre of civilians in Bosnia and volunteered to join in the hunt for Jews in Croatia. The Germans made a point of publicizing the fact that Husseini had flown from Berlin to Sarajevo for the sole purpose of giving his blessing to the Muslims that now formed the Nazi SS Army. A photograph of Muhammad al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, shows him inspecting Muslim troops in Bosnia as they paraded by in SS uniforms and helmets. And yet, these are the people that the United States aided and abetted in its war against the Serbian Christians. He was clearly proud of himself, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, not only for beguiling one of the 1 in 5 Muslim men of fighting age into goose-stepping with the Nazi war machine, but because the role he had played assured that millions of Jews and Christians would die rather than immigrate out of Nazi-controlled Europe. We detailed this life of this horrid man and his death also in the book accompanies Prophet of Doom. He is the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. I would encourage you to read about him. It is his legacy that America is now embracing. The Ustasi held that the Bosnian Muslims were Croats of the Muslim faith, a religion which they saw as so similar to Catholicism, they embraced one another. So not only were the Muslims not persecuted by the Ustasi, they joined in with them in Muslim Waffen SS divisions. The Catholic Muslim Ustasi murdered and tortured Jews and Serbs in incredibly bestial fashion. One of the most notorious concentration camps in all of Hitler's Europe was in Croatia. And the story of how its brick ovens burned Jewish children alive, as opposed to strictly acting as crematories, is one that will cause your skin to crawl. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my...